Welcome to Three Things I've Learned with your host, Susan Dolce, where we share the stories that shift our souls. In the next hour, we will dive deep into the soul-shifting magic of stories. Stories of radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. We're all students in this soul school called life. We don't need to do this alone. Why not share our notes? Three Things I've Learned starts now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Three Things I've Learned with me, Susan Dolce, where we share the stories that shift our souls. So take a deep breath here. So I do share a lot of personal stuff in this show, but there's one story in my life that I rarely share, and maybe because it happened so long ago, or maybe because it's too personal. But after reading my guest's book, it reminded me of that time in my life. I got married to my first husband pretty young after a rather hasty courtship. I was barely 21 and desperate to move away from the expectations of my parents and my own limiting beliefs. Like I needed to go, and he seemed like my ticket out. So this meant dropping out of college and moving almost 1,000 miles away from everything and everyone I knew. I really did think I knew what I was doing, because, you know, when you're 21, you think you know everything. But I did have a plan to go back to college on my own terms, which I did. But at that time, I thought I was running away from my situation, when actually I was running straight into my own dark night of the soul, my own spiritual deconstruction, really clueless of what I was getting myself into. And there's always two sides to every story. So I'm going to pass on the details of how that relationship turned my life upside down. But I just want to say that I learned a lot about my strengths and my fears and my faith and my soul. And in retrospect, I am truly grateful for the lessons I learned in those. It was almost 6 years. My guest today, at the tender age of 20, not only ventured on the road trip of a lifetime driving solo, which I don't even think I would do now at 57, driving solo from North Carolina to Southern California, but then also had the courage to write about her very personal spiritual deconstruction. Emily Dauberstein is a writer, community organizer, backpacker, and world traveler based in Asheville, North Carolina. In her first book, The Courage to Go, a memoir of the 7,000 miles that healed me, Emily shares her musings on wonder, grief, womanhood, healing, and her Christian faith deconstruction. Emily invites us all to reconsider where we come from and challenges us to plunge forward courageously into our own great unknown. Emily, welcome to the show.
Hi, Susan. It's such a gift to be here. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm so excited because I almost didn't get on at the very last minute. I was having technical difficulties, and so I'm still a little flustered. That's never happened to me before. Anyway, before we get started, Emily has so graciously offered to give away an autographed copy of her book. And it's when I picked it up and started reading it, I couldn't put it down. So you kind of call it a travel memoir, but it's really so much more than that. I mean, this is a can't put down sort of book. So she's giving away a free autographed copy to the first caller. And if you call in and you get Olivia, she's take down your information. That number is 1-800-930-2819. So, as I shared in the opener, I had to break free from a very controlling relationship at a pretty young age. Sort of, that's part of your story. So impressed with your courage and your fortitude to do what you did. But it reignited all of those feelings of unworthiness and vulnerability in me, like all over again. And I was like, I was sitting in the bathtub reading the book going, oh, I totally feel you, girl. I know. Yeah. So I'm super impressed that not only, like I said, I have the courage to go, but to actually write the book. Like, mm-hmm. I think putting that personal story on paper and for the whole world to read, like, kudos to you on that vulnerability. Like, so what led you to that, to get to that place where you're ready to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say publishing this book has been the most terrifying thing I've ever done by a long shot. And though my book became sort of an idea in 2016, shortly after getting back from this trip, I still had a lot of healing to do before I could even put language to my own experience, much less feel kind of tied up enough in my own soul to be able to release something so vulnerable out for the public to read, especially knowing that a part of my story does critique an institution that doesn't always take critique very well. And I had experienced that in my own personal experience of Christianity, as far as just people not really being willing to have conversations always that lead to tension or anything like that. And so I definitely had a lot of fears to get over in actually getting to the publication date, which led to me having to be really honest with myself as far as what I was ready to be open about. And when it felt right to release the book, opposed to doing it from like a business mindset of like, oh, well, it would sell really well during this season of the year, or I just wanted to strip all of that away and kind of make it a much more intuitive process. Because I knew that I wouldn't be able to invite other people, especially my readers, into that raw space unless I felt really comfortable in that raw space. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I apologize in advance if all of a sudden I take the mom role, because I think you're old enough to, I think my daughter's the same age as you. So that's why I'm like, oh my God, I'm just so like, when I was reading it, I was scared for you and I was excited for you. And then I was like the mom for you. And So speaking of parents, like, I'm sure that had to be a whole huge hurdle to conquer.
Yeah. As far as just my parents' reactions to me doing this, is that what you mean? Well,
yeah. I mean, because like if there are so many times I thought about writing my story and I was like, you know what? I know there's ways to write a story and leave, you know, names or people out of it. But I always feel like then it's not really the true story. It's sort of like dancing around the topic. And so I'm sure there's the whole aspect, and we're going to talk about that more, about leaving your faith. And I'm sure that, you know, took a toll on relationships and things like that. But yeah, like, were they resistant to you doing this, or were they supporting you in it?
I think they were definitely resistant, but I'm already a stubborn person, regardless of what season I am in my life. But I think I just had such an intense gut feeling that I needed to leave, that there was nothing they could really do to stop me. And I think they were able to intuit that to where like they didn't push too hard against me going, and more just kind of went into the gear of like, well, here's all the things that you can do to make sure that you stay safe. And of course, at 20, when you're in the middle of your first life crisis, you don't want any of that from your mom or your dad. So I definitely felt a little frustrated with how involved they wanted to be with my trip, because I definitely took this trip to get solitude for the first time. And I kind of make that parental dynamic some of the character dynamics in the book, because not only am I reaching back into, you know, our harmful past as far as like my relationship with my parents, as far as how they responded to my emotional and spiritual state during that time, they also are, you know, interacting with me throughout the story via texts. And then which I think I was a little worried at first, because they read it obviously for the first time once it was published, and I did a lot of briefing, but at a certain point there's only so much you can do to prep your parents for such a raw story. Mm-hmm. Because they had heard just the surface level, you know, what happened, where I went, kind of, you know, a few things that were meaningful, but as far as the intense, like really vulnerable parts of the story, that was totally new for them. And so though I'm not a parent yet, I can imagine how intense that is to read just your child's, just experience through depression and anxiety and loneliness and despair, and reading a book where that's so clearly laid out in just basic human terms that I hope that lots of people can relate to regardless of their background. But yeah, that definitely has been a point of tension at first in the early years of me starting to write this book. But thankfully over the past few years, my parents have done a lot of growing in their own journeys, you know, separate from our child parent relationship, which I think has made them much more open to holding space for the person I am now, opposed to this child that they thought they raised to be a certain way. And that has been really huge as far as just being able to reconnect as adults, which yeah. I think is a huge transition in a parent-child relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as a now parent of adult children, like I always used to joke around when my kids were little, you know, I'm like, I'm not your friend, I'm your mom. And I think there'll be a time where we can be friends, but, I mean, it's very, as they get older, I understand, you know, there's a lot of boundary setting on both sides, you know, and that we have to respect those boundaries. And I've always looked at and here I drift off into the parent topic again, like I always do.
That's okay.
You know, when you get to that young adulthood phase, whether it's in high school or college or whatever, you know, I always have to remind myself and my husband, like, it's their journey. Mm. You know, like, we might have birthed them and brought them into this world, but, you know, it's not about us and it's not our journey. And we have to just be there in whatever way we can to support them on their exploration, their, you know, getting in touch with their soul and their purpose in the world. So I could talk about that for forever.
It's meaningful. I'm glad that that connects with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, the whole book totally connected with me. And side note, listeners, everybody out there, she is an exquisite writer. Like, you really are a very talented writer. So I almost want to put that in there too. Yeah. This is a good time for me to take a little break, get a sip of water, because we're going to dive into some deep topics when we come back. Today, I'm talking with Emily Doberstein, the author of The Courage to Go. You're listening to Three Things I've Learned, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Trish Laub from A Cup of Comfort, where we talk about Care Hero topics that nobody wants to talk about. Here's your Care Hero tip of the day. During all Care Hero journeys, the need to keep track of a lot of information arises, some of it critical. Possibly the greatest challenge Care Heroes face is the gathering and organizing of information. Just as every trade has a power tool, whether an electric drill or a laptop, my family's Care Hero power tool was the three-ring binder. We generated a mini library of labeled three-ring binders, one for each category of information, complemented with additional spiral notebooks used to detail medical appointments and episodes. This unfussy and convenient system of binders helped my family stay organized and able to deliver the dignified care and end of life my parents desired. Tune into my show to learn more. See you on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 12 Pacific here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at info@trishlaub.com.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to transformationtalkradio.com or visit Susan's website at susandolce.com.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to let go of the I can'ts that are holding you down? Valerie Trujillo invites you to join her community on a mission to collectively heal as a tribe, where your vulnerability is heard and reciprocated. So tune in to Love and Light with the Crystal Blue Oracle every second and fourth Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Valerie and her work, visit CrystalBlueOracle.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Three Things I've Learned. I'm Susan Dolce, and today I am talking with author Emily Doberstein, who wrote the book, The Courage to Go, a memoir of the 7,000 miles that healed me. And before the break, we were talking about, your parents and how they were able to let go and do the hard parenting thing. But really, the beef of the guts of this book is really about, at least in my opinion, is your spiritual deconstruction from your sort of, dare I say, rigid religious upbringing, mm-hmm. on the backdrop of the most amazing landscape, which we'll get to that too, because, it's like a whole different kind of church. But so, what was it? There's not just the whole questioning of your faith, that whole existential crisis thing, but, to leave a faith tradition and the community you were raised in, I mean, you weren't just, a Sunday church goer, you were deep mm-hmm. in the community.
Yeah. I really almost up until I left for my trip, I was a worship leader in a pretty evangelical Christian environment. And so I talk in the book about just what it is like to not only leave a spiritual community, but experience that whole loss of your entire social web, which mm-hmm. with humans being social beings, that can be quite traumatic when it happens fairly suddenly or without a clear social web to kind of jump right back into for support. I experienced a lot of just feelings of isolation and loneliness and despair just because I didn't know where my people were anymore. Yeah. I kind of had this village, this tribe, this community that had been my community my entire life. And I never thought about what it would be like to lose it because I had never questioned the foundations of why we even were community in the first place. And once those foundations started to fall away and not work for me as well anymore, also not being in a very healthy emotional and mental state due to the emotional abuse that came from my relationship, which I also touched on in my book. It was just really hard to process and to know, where to go and who to be and what to think. And so I think I felt that really deeply on my trip, just what it meant to go off on my own for the first time now that I had no clear belonging. Which I think is something that we all experience at some point in our lives, just as we change and grow and as our communities, just change and morph even if it's just as simple as moving to a new state because of a positive job change, that still involves a lot of grief and change. And so, I tried to write my internal dialogue about processing those things in a way that would invite folks into seeing themselves implicated in that experience and realizing, you know, ways they might need to look back on seasons that they hadn't grieved fully, or look back on changes in their lives that, even if they were a positive change, required kind of letting go of some things that you missed from that previous season. And
I especially like how you talk about the grieving the things that could have been. Because I think we don't really think about that as an aspect of grief. It's just sort of like, it's FOMO, right? Or if you're missing out, like we didn't get to have that experience. But, and I think it's, it's sort of a similar situation. No, I guess it's not similar at all. But when my middle daughter got married, she moved to the Dominican Republic, and I wasn't concerned about her relationship, about the fact that she was getting married. I wasn't concerned about her age when she got married. None of that. I had to come to terms with the grief that I wasn't going to get to be the grandma I thought I was going to be, or that, you know, you envision the holidays and you envision these relationships, and there is, that's a whole aspect of grief we don't touch on enough. Yeah. But so another question, because in the book, you know, you kind of talk about who you felt safe around, because it was like, if you opened up, you didn't know if you were going to get sort of lectured back into, you know, believing what the community wanted you to believe. And I'm sure that had to be very isolating.
Yeah. A lot of folks that grow up in conservative Christian circles, kind of experience this one right way to respond to every life event. There's always a clear answer. There's always a Bible verse that you're supposed to go read. You know, you're supposed to just go pray about it. It just gets fixed. And so after spending 20 years of my life in an institution where when you present or when you open yourself up to communicate like, hey, I'm not okay, most of the time people respond with something that you need to do to become okay again, opposed to just shutting up and sitting with you in your pain, which I think in most of our experiences that cause pain or trauma, really all we need is for someone to sit with us and say that you're not alone. Right. And because I hadn't ever experienced that, it was really hard in my healing process to trust that that was even possible, which made that my timeline of healing take a pretty long time. I mean, multiple years of working up the trust in humanity again, of just being able to be an open and honest person and be accepted right where I was at, opposed to being told, okay, yeah, I see you where you are and this is where you should be, and that's on you to fix. Like, your pain is too much for me to sit with. Like, good luck. Sorry. So the idea of safety is something that's really important to me, especially today, as I feel like someone that is an advocate for folks who have been through this process, is establishing safe places for people to be open and vulnerable and honest about their human experience without the fear that they will get shamed for not doing enough.
Yeah, or fixed.
Right.
That leads, that's a perfect segue to one of the other things we kind of said we wanted to talk about, which I'm a huge fan of, and that's embracing the gray space, that liminal space, you know, like it's not all black and white, and we don't necessarily have an answer, and we don't have the right words, and it's just this sort of uncomfortable, squishy place that we need to kind of hang out and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah. I like that squishy place. That definitely is what it feels like when just like anything goes and there's no clarity yet. Do you just want me to talk about my thoughts?
Well, yeah, because I think there's so much to be learned in being able to hold that tension, which most people can't. They really struggle in that. They want it to be black and white, especially, right. You know, in the more conservative religions. It's like you said, they're going to give you a Bible verse and here's what you need to go journal and need to think about. And as opposed to just really sitting with the I don't know-ness and being right. Okay with that. Like, it's okay to not know right now.
Right. Well, I think that it's a practice, and that's something that a lot of folks don't highlight in either, whether people use language of, you know, deconstruction or healing or whatever it may be. Sitting in that gray in between space requires practice, because I feel like for most of us that grow up in like traditional education systems, there are right answers, and we're kind of trained to view this like right and wrong, true and not true, us and them mentality, because that doesn't take too much energy for our brains to process. It's easy to just jump to, okay, well, I'm not that, like that's separate from me, or this is what I believe to be right and that's just wrong. But what I learned really starting on this trip is there's a lot that we just have to sit in the unknowing. Which I honestly, most of our life is sitting in that unknowing and finding ways to breathe in ambiguity. And no one had ever told me that before, what it means to allow ourselves to take up space and ambiguity, opposed to like shrinking our human experience to get out of that ambiguity as fast as possible, which I definitely did in the beginning when I before I left on this trip, I was trying to heal by repressing, you know, just get it out. Don't look at the ambiguity, like remind myself of the right and wrong ways of being. Mm-hmm. And that just makes you sick inside. And so going on this trip was really for the first time sitting in that really uncomfortable space and being bad at it for a really long time. And I think that's something else that people need to hear, is that like, it's a lifetime of work. Like, healing is a lifetime of work. And I often say like, that's the most depressing and life-giving statement that I believe in, because like, healing is hard. It's labor intensive and it requires a lot of energy. And sometimes it's just nice to turn your brain off. And where I do believe like, you know, taking rest is important. I think it's really beautiful that healing takes forever. Or at least there's always something else, another layer that we can peel back to become a more authentic and whole version of ourselves. And I think that's so beautiful. And once I realized that those gray in between spaces were actually where freedom and light and life and healing were found, I was like, oh, I want to actually live my life from this place, opposed to taking every chance I can to get the heck away from it. Was one of the most freeing realizations on this trip for me.
I like to say that life happens in the messy parts. Mm-hmm. You know, life doesn't really happen in the squeaky clean and all that. No, yeah. that's how we learn and grow and deepen our relationships, is in the messy parts.
Yeah.
So we're going to take another quick break. Today I'm talking with author Emily Dauberstein and about her book. We're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to Be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to Be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com, you have the courage to be seen. See you later.
What we've been taught and told is not all there is. Life is all about energy, and the energy you feel is real. Tune into the energy paradigm each month on transformationtalkradio.com with Dr. Vic. The energy paradigm is an eye-opening, mind-shifting, transformative, and earth-shattering way to live, work, and do business that will enable you to unlock your magic every day. Visit theenergyparadigm.com.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dream that sets your soul on fire. So get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Three Things I've Learned. I'm Susan Dolce, and today I'm talking to Emily Doberstein. She's the author of The Courage to Go. It's a travel memoir. She calls it a travel memoir. I would call it a coming to age sort of memoir, because it's so much more than her travel. So she's giving away one of an autographed copy of the book. If you're interested in that, I suggest you hurry up and call, because this is a great book. She's also an exquisite writer. 1-800-930-2819. And Emily, where can people connect with you, find you, get your book? I'm sure on Amazon.
Yeah. So my book online is available pretty much wherever you typically buy books. So Barnes & Noble, Amazon, it's available in various ebook formats. So Apple, Kindle, all of the good things. And then I also sell copies from my website, which is just my name, www.emilydoberstein.com. Those are the main places to get my book. If you do have a local bookstore that you really love, you can go to them and just have them order it the way that they would order any other book if they don't have it in stock already. And that would be a way to support kind of a local business if you don't want to go directly through a big corporate Amazon. But I get the convenience. Sometimes it's just easier. That's where you can find it.
Yeah, we're definitely at a time where we need to support local business as much as we can. So before the break, we were talking about gray space, liminal space, that squishy space where people don't like to be because it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I liked how you said, embrace the ambiguity. But most of us, we're not taught to do that. We're taught to run away from it or numb it or push it down or whatever. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that, to me, again, as I keep saying that you're such a great writer, but this experience of yours is set against the backdrop of several different landscapes from national parks, everything from the desert, from Sedona to Yosemite, and your descriptions of the climbs, the hikes, the forests, the crystal clear lakes, it's definitely, I was there with you. I was totally there with you. But I would like to know how, if you feel like having that experience in nature gave you a different understanding or a different connection to God.
Yeah, I would say definitely. I think that my trip across the states and my experience backpacking and hiking throughout all the national parks that I traveled to I believe was my first authentic church experience ever, maybe, because there was no pretense. There was no expectation of who I had to be or what I had to believe. It was just pure being and pure existence and pure love and light. And I often say, you know, the most Christian aspect that I believe I still have carried into my current like spiritual life today is this idea that God is I am, God is being, God is the culmination of existence. And I think that the wilderness often is the place where we experience that most intensely, because I do believe that the woods or the desert or these wilderness places are an invitation to be our most authentic self, because it's away from the rise and grind of the machine of the economy. And there's no way to believe that you have to produce to have worth in the woods, which as someone who grew up in this very perfectionistic mindset, you know, I have to get all A's, I have to become a doctor, whatever it was that I, you know, grew up thinking, mm-hmm. I definitely created this idea that I only had value if I was producing or getting the grades or fulfilling a checklist. And then suddenly I went on this trip and for the first time I had nowhere to be, which was a completely different experience. But yeah, I would say that though I feel like I understood the divine more on this trip, my language for the divine kind of dissolved, which was a really beautiful experience because I didn't need to have language for the divine or God anymore. It was just pure experience, which I think is the most raw way to live an integrated life, and a way to take the most authentic way to commune with the divine, to use a more like religious language description. But yeah, the places that I went, I think being the backdrop of my experience, provided so many metaphors to just think and process and see myself in and be inquisitive about, which I think led me to deeper healing that I could have gotten just, you know, in a talk therapy session with a psychotherapist. Though I'm a big advocate of therapy, don't get me wrong. But yeah, there were aspects of the natural world that I was able to just connect to for the first time and realize that I wasn't separate from, whereas like in a enclosed church environment with, you know, huge walls and doors and lights and all these things, it's really easy to get disconnected from our actual bodies. You know, it becomes this very heady experience. And in the wild, when you're backpacking and sleeping outside under the stars, like you are not disconnected from your body. You are very much fully aware and fully present in this being that you carry around with yourself all the time, which was a really cool and necessary thing for me in my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. My most profound spiritual moments have always happened out in nature. It's, mm-hmm. It's alive, you know, it's like we actually get to, instead of talking about God, or even, you know, worshiping, it's like we are communing, like we are one with the divine, and it does, it pulses with an energy, with a vibration that, and again, like you said, it's experiential. Like you can say, yeah, it's beautiful. And, you know, the mountains in Yosemite were gorgeous and the rock formations in Sedona. But when you're there and you can touch it and see it and feel it and be in it, mm-hmm. it's almost like this, it's a feeling of belonging and connectedness that I don't think you can duplicate in any other environment.
Yeah, I fully agree.
So you have this, you know, you've had this experience of wonder and awe and the magnificence of the divine. So how do you keep that in your life now? How do you integrate that to keep that spirit flowing now?
Yeah, I think... Well, the natural world part of wonder is definitely still where I go to feel connected and where I go to experience healing and ask hard questions, just because that's where it all started for me. It started in the woods, and because I feel like I can rest and relax when I'm walking, or when I have my pack on and I'm going for an overnight trip, or I've picked up foraging for edible mushrooms as a hobby. So that's been a fun thing. It's been a hobby that has required me to pay attention to the ground for the first time, which
and know your mushrooms, right? Because
yeah, you can definitely end up very dead if you don't do it right.
Yeah, I mean that's a whole books and books worth of learning to know what you're looking for, not just where to find it, but what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And like learning more about even just fungal networks under the ground, I think sparks wonder, because there's this whole world of communication and relationships underneath us, which is crazy. Like, it's so easy to in this human-centered society to think that, like, oh, well, we're the only things that are complex and interesting. And then foraging, I go out and I see, like, oh, I know that this certain species of mushroom typically grows on this species of tree, and realize, like, oh, they have a symbiotic relationship, things that I never paid attention to years ago. So I think that those aspects of my life are so really important for sparking wonder. But I also would say that keeping myself uncomfortable in my relationships and in what I'm reading, as far as just keeping inquisition alive in my life. So instead of separating myself from who I might call other, or who I might not agree with, or we might be on different pages, kind of keeping those sources close in my life. Because I believe that when we retain that mindset of wonder and inquisition and fascination, we're much more likely to open ourselves up to the healing change that can happen when these, you know, separate sides are bridged. And it's something that I care about a lot. And wonder, I think, kind of taking this mindset of wonder into interactions where there might normally be tension, whether that be political tension or religious tension or whatever it may be, it can lead to the relationship building that's required for change to actually happen. So that's been, I think, a really cool way that wonder has manifested in my life in like a non-wilderness way, even though that's still really important to me, just in the day-to-day humans that I'm interacting with, kind of making that a practice of, instead of making up my mind about who they might be or what they might think, you know, being like, wow, you're a human. You have a whole different human experience than me. And that's fascinating. And what can I learn from you? And what can you teach me? And what can I teach you? Which is a new experience for me, because growing up in a specific form of church, you were trying to get everyone to be like you.
Yeah.
And assuming that you had all the right answers and you were the only one that had truth. And now, one, I realize how harmful that can be to folks that, you know, are outside of the church and experienced folks that say, hey, come over here, I have all the answers. Like,
right.
None of us have all the answers. And wonder can be a really beautiful way to bridge the gap.
Yeah. Curiosity.
Yeah.
I think, to sort of get biblical, you know, I kind of think that was the whole idea in the gospel of being like a child, is, mm-hmm. you know, approaching everything with curiosity and innocence and respect, without, you know, doing like the us and them, the getting away from duality. One of my favorite, authors, teachers, her name's Cynthia Bergel. I think that's how you say her last name. Or maybe that's an Italian steak meal. Anyway, but she wrote a book, and it was like, I think it was called The Third Way. And it basically, to get away from either or, but, you know, and I think we need as a society to focus on more of the but and, instead of, you know, trying to, you know, stay in the black and white. Again, we need to learn how to embrace those gray, squishy spaces. And that kind of leads to one of the other things that you bring up in the book that whoever's going to read this, if you're a young woman, I think you're going to relate to. And it's that whole sort of comparison, embracing ourselves for who we are and how we were made. And that really, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a quote out of the book.
Oh, yeah.
This kind of follows along with some of the work that I do. And I'll explain when it's done. But this is on page 326. And she says, "I think all of our clouds, our darkness, our demons, our shadows, want us to do is to tell the truth. They need us put language to them so they can show us that they're not as ugly as we think them to be, that they're just the parts of us who have been rejected, denied love, kicked out, traumatized, ostracized by whatever system we have left defining who we can and cannot be." And that just reminded me, like, part of the work I do is called it's the diamond process, but we talk about, you know, how we're diamonds. And not all of our facets are, you know, they're not all the good facets. They're not all the, you know, pretty, smart, you know, whatever label you want to put on it. There's always an opposite to every facet that we have as humans. And embracing that and saying, you know, and getting away from the shame and the unworthiness. And I think so many women in particular, but I think people in general just so struggle with, I'm good enough as I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like with that, like how, cause we're coming up on the top of the hour, but I'd love to know what you did and what you do now to still say, you know what, I'm perfect as I am.
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, in my experience, a lot of that dynamic in my life has involved rewriting the narratives about myself. And most of those narratives for me were taught to me from the institution of evangelical Christianity. And as a woman, that often looks like, you know, your body is bad. Your body can only take up a certain amount of space. You can only show so much of your body. You can only move your body in certain ways, and moving it too much is not okay. And actually can be harmful to men, which is a whole other issue that I could talk about forever.
Yes, that would be a whole show by itself.
Yeah. And so, and even, you know, post deconstruction, when I could rationally say, yeah, I believe that my body is good. I believe that my body is beautiful. However it wants to take up space, there were ways that my body remembered the lies that were kind of told about it growing up. And so I think that for me, it's required a lot of kind of reintegrating the relationship between my body and my mind. And, you know, that looks really different for a lot of people. For me, it has involved a lot of kind of intentional yoga practices, which I think can be really healing, and kind of talking to your body as its own being. I mean, like, I don't know if that sounds weird, but
that makes sense.
Our bodies have their own language, and they communicate things to us. And like, a huge part of my healing experience was learning what emotions felt like in my body, because I had been so disembodied from this very, like, you know, the mind and the body can be bad in certain ways in church, and you have to really get them under control or Satan will get you, or you'll be a stumbling block, or all of those terms that people use. Yeah, just kind of breaking those things down and realizing the ways that my body keeps me safe, and the ways that I can reframe my thinking to let my body know that it's safe. So it's like, it's this give and take, which I think sometimes requires a lot of therapy, which I also have been benefited from. But yeah, does that answer your question?
Absolutely. You know, it's just, and I think I was going to mention this saying that my teacher uses a lot in a couple spaces back in the show, but she always says, you don't clean your house only once. You have to keep cleaning your house. And meaning, so like what that means to me in this regard is like, you know, we're not going to necessarily get over that unworthiness because it's been so, we're bombarded with it, not just when we're growing up. And I mean, our parents really, you know, they're all trying to do the best they can, but it's in the media, it's in society. And, you know, having to push back against those ideas on a regular basis. I mean, I'm 57 years old and I still do it, like, you know, because it's just a constant, you know, effort to kind of slay the unworthiness dragon.
And the divisiveness of comparison, especially within, you know, female relationships. I think we're all trained to compete with each other, which is really sad because it cuts us off from each other. I remember one of my most popular blog posts was the one where I just spoke really honestly about my experience with body image and my experience with disordered eating and all these things that are very like hush hush in kind of the conversation around women, which is super unfortunate because so many of us experience it because of what we're taught in society about what our bodies should look like, what our bodies should act like, you know, who is beautiful in all of these things, which are not true, but rewording those things in our experience, it takes a long time.
Yeah. Well, because it's rewiring. It's not just rewording.
Yeah. And I think that the most healing thing that we can do in that space is to just be honest, is to just say, you know, hey, like, I don't feel good about myself today, you know, within your community where you do feel safe, like, and have people remind you of who you are, as a beautiful person, regardless of your gender and regardless of the ways your body takes up space in the world. Because even, you know, regardless of how much a person meditates or does yoga or prays or whatever, you know, over time, you don't think about it for a week and then all of your limiting beliefs come back and you need people in your life to hold you accountable to, like, oh, what are you believing about yourself this week? Or, just having spaces where those conversations are normalized opposed to someone speaking up and saying, oh, I hate my body this week. That not being shamed, because all of us feel like that at some point. All of us feel like we're unworthy at some point. And sometimes it's hard to believe it for ourselves without being able to externally process that with someone. So I'm super passionate about that. I feel like bodies and beauty and eating and that whole complex, disordered relationship is something that I'm really passionate about and might be a future topic of writing, but we'll see.
Oh, yay. Book two. Yes. Well, Emily, thank you for today. This has been, I could have gone on for 2 hours. I had so many things I wanted to talk about with you. But I'm just, I'm feeling very grateful to have this time with you today and just so impacted by your, that you've come, I don't want to, I'm going to sound like a mom, so I can't help it. But because learning this lesson as young as you have, like taking all of this in and doing this hard work, like, is some people die and never get to where you are right now. So, I applaud, the time that you took to do all this introspection. I'm so glad you put it in a book for all of us to share, because it was just, it's a fabulous book. It's The Courage to Go by Emily Dauberstein. And you can get it on Amazon. As Emily just mentioned earlier, you can go to your favorite bookstore and ask them. We support local business right now. But I feel very, very grateful to have spent this time with you today. And emilydauberstein.com. Can get her book there too. If you want to know more about my coaching practices and my diamond process, you can find more about me at susandolce.com. I didn't get to talk about the three things I've learned because I've learned a lot. So, but we all have a story to tell.
Yeah.
We can live in the story or we can transform the story. It's your choice. If you change your story, you can change our world. Hashtag Storyfield. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more inspiring stories of radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. For more information on Susan and the stories that shift our souls, visit her at SusanDolce.com. That's SusanDolce.com, D-O-L-C-I. We'll see you next time.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.